Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
But I really just want to stop men asking when's International Men's Day on International Women's Day. And if that happened, I'd be absolutely happy with that. It's a tiny step, but I think it's almost weirdly the key to almost everything that's happened in the last 10 years.
Movember presents In the Barber Chair, a podcast dedicated to bringing you real cuts and real conversations about men's health. I'm Matt Johnson and I'm your host. Movember wants men to take action to live happier, healthier, longer lives, and they invest in prostate cancer, testicular cancer, mental health and suicide prevention. Hi, this is Movember's In the Barber Chair with Matt Johnson. Our guest today is the very funny, very talented Richard Herring. Richard, how are you, mate?
I'm okay. It's day two of lockdown. I'm a second lockdown. It's not really affecting me yet, and my daughter is still at school. My son is allowed to go to nursery, and I live in the countryside, so I spend a lot of time at home anyway. So at the moment, it hasn't really felt like lockdown. I'm feeling okay. I'm going to try and be healthy this time. That's the plan. It was the plan last time, to be fair, but I've stopped drinking.
Have you really?
Yeah. I stopped drinking all of last year as well. And then I started again partly because of lockdown. And but in lockdown, I just started drinking a bit too much. So, and there's no way of running off. So I'm going to try and eat healthily and look after myself. Just because I think, like, also, the minute they said, oh, when you're slightly overweight, approaching middle age, you're in a bit more danger. I went, oh, maybe I should lose some weight. And then just carried on eating biscuits. So I think this time I might go, okay, well, let's just try and get a little bit slimmer to offset the chances of something nasty happening.
Well, yeah. That's the same kind of approach that I've had all year. It started off really well.
Yeah.
And then I found some really good breakfast wines. Just some of the best. Then I ended up in France for a week and wow. Then it all went to shit then.
Yeah.
Do you know when you have your step count on your phone?
Yeah.
I didn't hit 600 one day. I just... That's pretty much from the bedroom to the pool to the barbecue and to the fridge and back. That's it. That's all I did. But you know, you go through these things in life to realize what's important to you and how to navigate a certain crisis. And I think, you know, now in this second lockdown, I think maybe we've learned from the first one.
Maybe we'll see. And I think, you know, we kind of knew it was going to come, even though you kind of hope it was just the dread of it coming was worse than it coming. I think it's just like, oh no, I can't face there being another one. Yeah. And then actually, it'll be okay. There's been lots of positives for me, and because I do a lot of work from home anyway, I've just been doing more inventive stuff. It's been, you know, in terms of work, it's been actually quite good for me. But I'm lucky that I do a lot of online stuff anyway. So it's.
I was going to ask, did you have to diversify? Is that
well? I was already diversifying
what you could do.
I was already doing quite a lot of weird stuff that probably works better in lockdown, like playing myself at snooker. And making people watch that, and clear stones off a field near my house and do a podcast about that. And then in lockdown, that seems like a normal behavior. Whereas I've been doing the snooker one for about a decade. I've been doing the stone one for about 2 years. So it sort of almost found its, and the snooker ended up being in a TV show where they did comics at home. So I ended up actually getting the snooker televised, which is much to the annoyance of my wife who hates me in that podcast. So I actually got paid for playing myself at snooker. So I'm the world's only professional self-playing snookerist.
That's incredible. The world's best.
Well, at the moment, it's me one versus me two. And currently they are, it's very evenly matched, and it's something like 54 all at the moment.
Oh, congratulations to you
Thank
both.
You. Yeah, so this is exciting. Me two was ahead, but me one stormed back. I've started filming it. I used to do it just as an audio. And since I've started filming it, there have been some very, very exciting. I'm getting a bit too good at snooker. That's the problem.
What I've liked this year is that a lot of people who had jobs that nans couldn't understand are sitting there thinking, do you know what? I'm living my best life now. And to be releasing a book during this time, how has it been for you? Because I know part of the bother with releasing a book is all the press, all the travel, all the promotion for it. But I suppose that's out of the window now.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, I've really enjoyed doing PR this year for various things, because you can, you know, usually it's, I live like 20 miles from London. Usually it's, can you drive into London or get the train into London, and we'll do one and then come home and then go and do another one. And it doesn't matter if you're at home, you know, I can literally just crawl out of bed, come up here and to my attic where I've got everything set up and do two or three interviews, and then I'm, you know, still at home. So it saves a lot of time. I think once we're back to normal, I think a lot of that sort of stuff's going to stay online, which I think is good, because it's saving travel, it's saving, you know, the planet a little bit if we do it all remotely. So that's all been fine. I wrote the book during the first lockdown, so, you know, it was really hard to actually concentrate. I found it very difficult to get into the headspace to do it. It had already been commissioned and everything. So I knew I was going to be doing it, but it came in about a month late, I think, in the end, but they were very cool about it. And then I predict in the book that you'll be reading the book during the second lockdown, even though I finished it in June. And it came out on the day of the second lockdown began. So I look like an absolute genius of predicting the future.
Is there anything else you can help us out with? You know, I can stick a bet on?
I mean, you know, a cure for, if I'm that good, I should get a cure. 2-1 Spurs, that's what I always predict. And it sometimes comes true.
Every now and then. They're playing themselves. it's a fascinating read. And I've got here. It is actually very, very interesting. I think the entire world of social media and that kind of response and idiotic response that you do get. And I've actually been a part of this discussion, the discussion of International Women's Day.
Yeah.
The amount of people jumping onto that on the day, saying, "Where was International Men's Day?" And obviously, it's November the 19th. And if every single year I've seen it, and it always riles me. It always is something that really gets to me. You can relate to a lot of things that this scenario with people jumping on a bandwagon just to kind of make their voices heard. Now you've been getting annoyed with it for a decade, haven't you?
Yeah, pretty much. I think I can't quite work out when was exactly the first year I did it. But yeah, just like you and like a few other people, I noticed people would, people were tweeting the same thing. And then, you know, it was just this sarcastic, when's International Men's Day? And like, A, it's on International Women's Day, it seems rude. B, but mainly, you know, there is an International Men's Day. So it's just, for me, to begin with, it was just the fun of pointing out someone's utter stupidity, that they would think they were being original, which they're not being, because thousands of people are doing it if you search for it, but also not even thinking, oh, I've come up with a good thing to tweet. Should I just Google it just to check there isn't an International Men's Day? And so there is one. And so you just, you know, it's just a perfect joke, because, you know, someone tweets something, you tweet them back, and then they have to go, oh, or delete it, or apologize, which they won't do, or say thank you, which, you know, happens about one in a million times. So they're not, and of course, nobody wants to know when International Men's Day is. They're all trying to make the point that because of political correctness gone mad, we wouldn't be allowed to celebrate being a man, despite the world being pretty much celebratory of men. You know, I understand where they're coming from. I understand they think they're being oppressed, and they think that the world's changed so much that now men are the persecuted species. But it doesn't hold water if you look at any of the facts. And also, there is an International Men's Day. So if you want to celebrate it, you can. None of these men are interested in celebrating the thing that they worry so much. So you tell them where it is, they don't. I go, what are you going to do? No response. Last year or the year before, I did a whole thing, but I also did a scheduled tweet to every single person say, who'd ask, saying, it's today, what are you doing? What are you going to do? What have you got planned? And of course, nobody responded because they're not interested. So it's a question, you know, it's just this little niggling thing where they're trying to be niggling. They make themselves look foolish. And I think when I started in 2010, 2011, or whenever it was, those sort of people seemed like ridiculous. They seemed like, oh, these are just a fringe of foolish men who don't understand the way the world is, usually men. But over the decade, that sort of idiocy has become almost the default position, to the extent we see, you know, the politicians that are getting in and hopefully getting out. And it changes from this when's International Men's Day to when's White History Month, and what about All Lives Matter and White Lives Matter? And it's just people misunderstanding so much. And I think generally men who make the rest of us look bad. They make International Men's Day, they actually devalue International Men's Day because it makes it look like a knee-jerk reaction, which I always thought it was. It isn't. International Men's Day wasn't really set up as a reaction to International Women's Day. It was set up to celebrate men, which is not a bad thing to do, right? And I think for one day a year, good idea. Let's do it, but let's fucking do it. Let's actually do it. Let's not just moan about it on International Women's Day. And it's as if men arguing as if the media is somehow biased against men, that somehow women, despite being, you know, 25% of the media, have managed to dominate the media so much that they're able to control the agenda. Go, well, why is it not celebrated as much? And the reason it's not celebrated as much is because of you, because you're making it look like a knee-jerk thing that's just this horrible, bitter response from someone who has a problem with women, and that's what it's about. And I think, you know, really interesting writing the book, because I've obviously thought about this a lot over the 10 years. But when I actually sat down to collate it all, and with everything that was going on with COVID and Black Lives Matter, and it just sort of all seemed to kind of slot into place. And I sort of thought, there's more to this than I realized. There's more to International Men's Day than I realized. I think to an extent, I've been maybe a little bit unfair as well. And people, I've been criticized all the time. I've been doing it by minorities of people on the fringes, but most people seem to get it and like it and know what it was, what I was doing. But some women felt I was making International Women's Day about myself. Some men thought I was knocking International Men's Day or not caring about men's mental health and stuff, which I do care about. And so, like, to be able to sit down and actually think about it and collate it and form an argument, a lot of the things occurred to me as I was writing the book. So, you know, I worked my way through and then go, oh, you know, Movember actually was a big one. It was like suddenly going, oh, it never struck me. You know, there's Movember. That's a whole month. Men have a whole month to do this stuff. And men get involved with Movember because it doesn't feel like, oh, we're reacting to something. It isn't a sexist thing. It's an attempt to raise money for male charities that women are welcome to get involved in as well, which is obviously important. But it's a month long. I never said to any of these guys, yeah, but we don't have, no one celebrates International Men's Day, but we celebrate Movember for a month. Don't let the women know we have a whole month. They'll be furious when they find about that. So, you know, it was these little things I realized as I was going, and to think about why it is that men are like that and what's motivating them to be like that and what's going on inside them, which I've always been fascinated with trolls on the internet anyway, is, you know, as a comedian.
Do you think that's what it is then? Is just an element of trolling and being contrary?
I think there is. I think it is that contrariness. I think it is. Well, it's the feeling that feminism or the quest for equality or somehow is threatening them personally, I think. I think it feels like a threat. I think they worry that women are trying to become dominant, which is not the point of feminism. But also, it's this weird thing where I think it's difficult for men to accept that a lot of the world's problems come from men, and men are the victims of a lot of it. Okay, most men are the victims of the patriarchy as much as a lot of women are. In that we're sent to war, we're the going down the mine, you know, historically at least, you know, and we're going to prison more than women are. We're suffering in mental ways, in different ways than women are. And it's not women's fault for that. And so to for it's easy to blame, you know, it's easy to pick on a scapegoat and go for women or for immigrants or whatever. But actually, if you sit back and think about it, it's about something bigger. And men are weirdly buying into a system that I think for the vast majority of us makes our lives a lot less happy. And I think we can, you know, equality is about equality. If women get equality, men get equality as well. So the idea of being, the idea of arguing that you're wanting equality whilst arguing against someone who also wants equality is a kind of insanity. And you know, I think it's just a little mental shift that we men have to make. It's not up to women to do this, it's up to men to make. And I think it's up to men just to nudge other men in the right direction. When we see something, you know, if you would often just ignore someone making a mildly sexist comment. You would ignore someone saying, when's International Men's Day? And you might laugh along and go, ah. But actually go, just take them aside and go, look, there is one. And let's, if you want it, if you're bothered, let's do something about it. But you're making the rest of us look bad. I think, you know, I think men, we need to be able to, I'm lucky and you're lucky as well. We work in a medium where we talk and discuss things, and I'm very honest in my work, and I, you know, I admit my failings. And this is not a book by someone who's going, I'm a brilliant feminist and I've lived a perfect life and I've never done anything wrong. I've done lots of things wrong. I've been an idiot my whole life. It's taken me till I was 40 till I met my wife and even began to get my life in order. And you know, I've done lots of, I'm not a PC comedian. I do jokes that I think are funny. It's not that I'm particularly un-PC, but you know, I did a show about growing a Hitler moustache, which goes into, but I don't think many people do that in November, but I grew a toothbrush moustache to...
He's ruined it for everyone.
So Hitler ruined it. So I was trying to get it back for Chaplin, but also just trying to work out why that is associated with Hitler and evil and why you can't do it. So, you know, I'm not a PC comedian. So I think that's a good thing. I'm aware of my flaws. But we're allowed, you know, we discuss and we chat about stuff as in our jobs.
Yeah.
And most men have been told from childhood not to talk about your feelings, not to cry, that men are meant to behave in a certain way. And I think that's where a lot of our problems are coming from. And you know, men are good. There's loads of good men. And there's loads of men who grow up to be good men.
The thing is, I see every single day, and I've been a part of this issue as well, whenever I have a bad mood or wherever I'm feeling down or in a shit mood because I've drunk too much or done something, I usually let rip on social media or I bite at stuff and I get tangled into this stuff. So I can see in a compassionate way how people can be online and be angry. And I've seen a lot of it.
And, you know, you've got this anonymity. And look, as a comedian, I don't get a lot of flack on social media. I do a little bit when doing stuff like this. And it's hard to deal with. But you also think, why, you know, when someone's hunted you down to personally go, I don't like you because of this, you could take it personally. I mean, you've got, as a comedian or a person, you go, well, look, not everyone's going to like what I'm doing. It doesn't matter if one person doesn't like me anyway. It takes a little while to get to that realization, but it's actually... I'm not doing my stuff for everyone. So, you know, it's one person telling me they doesn't like it. Doesn't matter as long as I'm going in front of an audience of people who are laughing. But also, what is making you do that, right? What's making you go to a person to tell them you don't like what they're doing? There's a negative thing inside you that's is saying, I'm hurting. I want to make someone else hurt. This guy's annoyed me for some reason. Maybe he's touched on something that's personal to me and has made me think about stuff. Maybe I just don't like him and I just want to get some little bitter bit of me out. And that's when you have empathy and sympathy for that person. And often, you know, sometimes I would reply and be harsh back, or sometimes I'd quote tweet and make people look foolish. And I do sometimes do that. I sometimes get angry with someone if they're particularly unpleasant. But I've found if you reach out and go, hey, look, man, it's fine. You know, look, what I'm interested in why you're doing this. I, you know, I don't mind you don't like me. What's going on? And then sometimes people will refuse to acknowledge their, you know, if you say, what's making you do this? What, let's have a think, you know, you're very incisive about me. Let's turn that incisive. Yeah. Let's have a look at you. Why are you doing this? Some people will run a mile and not talk about it, but some people will think about it. And if you're reasonable and talk back, people will sometimes go, yeah, okay, look, I was a bit high. You know, you'll get a drunk person tweeting in the middle of the night and go, when you sober up, let's get back in touch and let's have a chat about what you sent me there.
I agree with you. I'm exactly the same in different areas, maybe not as aggressive, but it's very difficult for me to change my mind.
Yeah.
When I've said something, if somebody, A, if they correct me, don't like that, that's something, that's the,
yeah,
that's my brain is programmed to go, nope. No, that's,
but it is programmed. It is programmed. As a man, we have been programmed to be that. And that, you know, Donald Trump is the archetypal zenith example of that. He cannot be wrong. He cannot be not the best. He has to, you know, absolutely lie, and there's evidence in front of him, and someone's given the evidence, he will still insist because he can't be wrong. And that's, as men, we've been. I don't think it's innate. Okay. I think it's something we're taught, and it's something that the idea of losing face, the idea of showing weakness, you know, there might be some, you know, evolutionary element in that, you know, you've got to be mildly protective or whatever, but it's that we can be wrong. It's actually freeing if you admit you're wrong, you know. What I've really found with my comedy, the things that I were most nervous to talk about or the most embarrassed about to talk about were absolutely the most freeing things to talk about, because immediately you get this reaction. People, we're all the same. You know, we all make mistakes. We're all weak. We all get drunk sometimes. We all have sex with the wrong person sometimes. It's, you know, that's humanity. It's not even male or female. It's humanity. And so to be able to talk about it and just let it out, otherwise it festers inside you and you worry about it. And I guess men are scared, right? Men are scared. The world's changing. People are getting called out for things. Men are thinking, well, you know, what's in my past? What have I done that? Is that, you know, well, there was that time at that office party where I touched that girl's bum. Am I going to get sent to prison? You know, so it's scary for men, but it doesn't have to be scary, because we're trying to, you know, trying to create a world where things are more equal isn't a bad thing. Yeah. If you're confident, you're a talented person, it doesn't matter. You know, it's good to have more competition. The only people who should be scared of equality are the people who aren't, who are getting by. And that's why, and I think those might be the people who are most scared of it, the people who know, oh, actually, I've been lucky, I've got away with this. And look, I'm a comedian, and I've, you know, it's so difficult. And, you know, you feel like you're getting away with it every day. So I completely understand, that as well.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Well, it's that mind, like you say, is that mindset, just being stuck in that way. And I've been there too. It's that fear of failure, fear of rejection and judgment. I think that's a big thing with lots of men. A judgment because you're being vulnerable. And you hit the nail on the head with that type of human being like a Donald Trump. And there's, you know, there's elements in everybody like that. And it's ego. is full ego in display, and you can't be wrong, you can't be vulnerable, you cannot be seen to be weak because you of your own interpretation of what the judgment would be. And that's scary. That's it really is. Scary. Yeah.
And I'm competitive. I hate to lose. I'm competitive in games. If you watch me on Taskmaster on Channel 4 at the moment, I'm a very competitive person. It hurts me if I lose. It annoys me that it hurts me if I lose. I still, you know, it's usually in games and it's usually a thing I can shake off. It's not so much in life. I think I'm better in life. But yeah, it's, you know, it's still, you've been conditioned to go that way. And what's interesting, when you allow, you show your vulnerability, and men are taught, like, I think, for, you know, we're just taught all the wrong things. And in terms of, like, a lot of these guys are the, you know, this a lot of the really nasty right-wing stuff is, you know, guys who are frustrated about sex and things like this and thinking women won't ever have sex with them, or they want to have sex with supermodels and the supermodels aren't going to have sex with them. And actually, they're taught completely the wrong thing. They're kind of made to believe women are a different species, that women aren't interested in having sex, that women have to be persuaded or cajoled into having sex. And actually, by showing vulnerability, by being a human being, you'll be more attractive to women. By being honest, you'll be more attracted to women. And that includes just saying, look, I'm not ready to have a relationship. You know, I would, if you're interested in just hanging out, that would be great. And, you know, and that's the thing. I think I realized that in my mid-30s, my whole life improved because I suddenly realized, oh, look, if I'm in a, you know, I'm single and want to be single, the people I'm dating, if I just say, look, I'm not looking for anything serious now, if they go, oh, well, I am, you go, oh, well, okay, well, that's not going to work out. And if they go, nor am I, then you, that's cool. And then you'd see how things go. But it took me till I was 35 to realize that.
Scarier, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, it is, but it's, you know, it's honesty and vulnerability are actually weapons in your favor as a man. And that's the weird thing. Like, if you show your vulnerability, it doesn't make you weak. It makes you strong. And if you do it in the right, you know, not, I mean, I'm not, I was going to say not if you're crying or about everything all the time. I mean, that's what I sort of think the International Men's Day thing is a bit like a, you know, men are acting like babies. They're going, when's it my, you know, why is it not my birthday today? Why is it your birthday today? It's that babyish thing, which I talk about being 6 years old and getting upset about not winning past the parcel at someone else's birthday. And that's what International Men, doing that on International Women's Day is the same as that. You look like a baby, you make men look like babies. A lot of us are babies, but we have to try and not be babies. And so it's this weird juxtaposition of men wanting to be all macho, but then, you know, and Trump again is exactly it, isn't it? It's toys out the pram the minute you don't get your way. He's a little toddler. He's trying to posture like, oh, I'm all muscle, look at me, I'm a big... And you know, there's a middle ground. You don't have to be either of those things. And that's, you know, in a way I think, okay, look, those guys asking when's International Men's Day and getting upset about not having a Google Doodle for International Men's Day, they're at least expressing themselves. I kind of feel like, okay, look, maybe I was too harsh because they're having a go at expressing
what... Was that
what,
a fear of yours when you put it all together that men would gang up on you and say, stop telling us what we should do?
Not really. I just... Because I think it was so clearly... it was so clearly picking on... You know, I think what happened was some feminists and some Mennonists interpret it in the way they want to do it. The vast majority of people got it. It's about pointing out someone's stupidity, but also the ultimate joke is that I then set myself the task of trying to tell everyone, and that's impossible. And so I'm actually, the joke's on me because what I'm doing is not possible. So like, that's why it went on for so many years. He's still there, frozen. He's still going. Yeah, he's fine. You're right.
Still here.
So it's going on for so many years and I'm never going to do it. And so, you know, and I end up having this horrible day where I'm trying to get to everyone. So there's several jokes in there, but ultimately the joke's on me. Occasionally men have got nasty, and women have, you know, and women have not liked me making the day about myself. I explain all this in the book and talk it through. I have some sympathy with both those things. So I certainly wasn't trying to knock anyone trying to do good stuff for male mental health or testicular cancer, which is why I'm very happy to support Movember and charities like Calm, which I have done all through these years. I think those things are very important. But it only coming to write the book, I thought, look, is it, you know, in a way, aren't these, even if these guys are wrong and even these guys are aiming their feelings in the wrong direction, they are just trying to express themselves. And they are just showing their own vulnerability. They're worried about something. And so, yeah, I'm not sure. I'm stopping doing the International Women's Day thing for lots of reasons, mainly for my own mental health, because it was genuinely was
it's
very
a lot of time.
Well, it's a lot of time. It was very upsetting. It was, and there would be occasional threats, right. and a few, and sometimes those started being directed towards my family, and then I kind of thought like this, it's not worth that even for. For this, which is just a silly, fun joke. Even though I started raising money for Refuge, which was great. I think if that hadn't happened, then I probably would have stopped earlier. But, you know, we started raising huge amounts of money for Refuge, which was just a massively unexpected bonus from it. But yeah, it's, you know, nobody's perfect and no one's doing everything right. And I understood what I was doing. I think most people understood what I was doing. But it's still worth questioning yourself on everything, which I think the book does. I think the book takes you through my entire motivations for it. Yeah. People say it's for PR, you're doing this to publicize something. And it was never that. It was, I just thought it was funny. And then I just thought it was funny that I'd set myself this trap that I'd fallen into.
It's also a really interesting way to start a conversation about this topic. Yeah. and men and reactions and contrariness and everything it raises, because it needs to be talked about.
It does, but again, I don't think I would have. My editor, the Rhiannon, who got in touch with me about this, and my initial editor, it was sort of her. She said, "Look, I think there's something in this, and you could take this on to other things." And I was going, "Well, you know, I've stopped doing this. I don't know if I want to put myself through the whole thing of writing a book and getting all again." I always was very conscious, right? On the day, I would sometimes be asked to go and do things or talk on, be interviewed about it. And I would always turn it down because I actually didn't want to make International Women's Day about myself. And I would say, can you talk to someone from Refuge or can you talk to someone from there? I don't want to have an interview about it. So I felt, my reticence to begin with was, if I write a book about it, everyone's going to think, oh, you only did it so you could write a book about it. And then, you know, and then it's all about you, Richard. And so I was actually very reticent about doing that. But that she really talked me around it. It was her whole, look, this can go on to be, this isn't just about this. It's about why are men the way they are. And she kind of recognized in me, I think from a couple of things I'd written, that I could write that sensitively, that it wouldn't just be men are all terrible or men are all brilliant. It would be, let's balance it up. Let's try and work out why those men are asking that question. Let's try and work out if there's a way we can move things forward. And, you know, the ultimate goal of the book is very minor. I think we take in a lot of stuff around it and that I hope people will think about. But I really just want to stop men asking when's International Men's Day on International Women's Day. And if that happened, I'd be absolutely happy with that. It's a tiny step, but I think it's almost weirdly the key to almost everything that's happened in the last 10 years. And if we could have stopped it 10 years ago, I don't think the world would be the same place. But just not just that question, but the reason that men are angry and the reason that men are annoyed enough to do this and the reason that they're spouting this stuff out is obviously a bigger issue. It's a small book and I don't get like into the huge depths of why that is. But I think, you know, I think it does enough in this book to make you think about it and also have the arguments I think you need to take you through. If you have a discussion about this with someone, I think the stuff in this book will help you express those. And a few people have said that it sort of expresses what you feel, but didn't necessarily know how to express. And it took me a while to do it myself because I knew what I felt and I knew why I was doing it. But I had to, you know, it was hard.
I was going to ask you about that. It's a hard thing to do.
Yeah. Well, it's hard. It was harder doing a short book, but I'm glad it was a short book because I think I was really forced to find the exact thing I wanted to say. And, you know, you're covering big subjects and I wanted to cover even bigger subjects. And I kind of thought that I sort of can't because, you know, I need to keep this, really, really thought out. But yeah, there was, throughout I was writing it just basically March, April, May in lockdown. And it was hard and I was coming to a halt and going, this isn't it. And, you know, just managing to kind of squeeze the early chapters out. And then just, you know, over time, it just sort of started coagulating. But I thought about it a lot. And I had to think about the dichotomies within what I was thinking and the contradictions of what I was thinking, which, you know, the main one is, why am I criticizing men for making International Men's Day and Women's Day about themselves when I spend all day answering this one question? And that's, there's a dichotomy in that. And there's a, there's a, you know, there's an irony in that, but I can justify it. But whilst acknowledging, yes, I can't really massively, you know, I can't like 100% go, don't make International Women's Day about men. but I'm trying, you know, but what I'm doing was trying to stop that happening. And you know, and my reasons for that are good, I think, and I'm pleased with it. So it was good to be forced to think about it. It was good to be first forced to work out all those little steps that lead to the conclusion. I think it does flow as this this book that feels like a lighthearted book, has lighthearted moments in it. Mm. It's a lot about how stupid it is to be worried about anything, having a day when everything has a day, and there's lots of stuff just about how many things have days and how meaningless it is to have an international day because everything has an international day. But then you just, it sort of takes you by the hand and pulls you through all this, and then suddenly you're thinking about White Lives Matter and why people are saying that, and you're thinking about why people are pulling statues down, why people are getting annoyed about statues, and everything else. So, it's interesting how something so small can represent a lot of the stuff that's going on now. Mm. And, you know, and I don't have the answers to it. I think we're going to go through more turbulence and a period of more difficulty as the old order and the old way of doing things and the new way of doing things. I hope there'll be a new way of doing things. It's always going to create friction as we push through. But I genuinely think, I like men, you know, and I'm a man because I am one, and I like men. I like women too, and I sort of prefer women. But I like men, and I think most men are good, and I think most men do the best they can. And you know, I think we do need to have more positive male role models. We do need to like big up the men who are doing well, and mm-hmm. and that includes the men who've done badly and have repented. Because, you know, I'm not into that whole, like, cancelling. I'm not into that. You've made a mistake in your life. That's it. It's over. Because that's no way to live your life. That's no way to, you know, get progress. If someone changes their mind, you know, if that's what you want. It's weird. You sometimes get, I've even had it with this, you know, people going, oh, you used to do this joke about this. And you know, they're often taken out of context. You did this joke about women. And I'd say, yeah, I did. I'm doing the book. I talk about it in the book. So how can you do this? You're a hypocrite. And you kind of go, well, what do you want? Do you want me to carry on doing the jokes that you don't like? Or do you want me to move on? You know, surely what we want is everyone to move on. And it's kind of weird to, I mean, some things in the past, you know, should be investigated, but we don't need to go into every tiny, tiny thing and make people feel bad for changing their minds. Because if you want to change minds, if you want equality, you've got to change minds. So everyone who changed their mind is a step forward. And you know, what I realized, I think, most with this book is that men are their own worst enemy, that we need to sort ourselves out for our own good, which is, you know, I think, again, what very much at the heart of Movember, mm-hmm. I think all the mental health stuff, you know, and this year more than ever, you feel it because that the all the stuff we've had to go through this year, if you have any mental health problems or any anxiety or any depression, we've all experienced it in deeper this year than we ever have. So it's more important now. But most of us will have experienced that. You know, I've got depression and I don't think I wouldn't put it on any level of like, it's like a huge issue. I wouldn't like compare myself to other people. Or if I compare to them, I'd say I'm, you know, on the very much on the low end. But because we all get depressed, we all wake up in the middle of the night sometimes, you know, scared and afraid and having lost touch with reality a little bit mm-hmm. through our dreams, and we can all address it. We don't have to be ashamed. We don't have to be embarrassed about that. That's a human thing. So the stuff that Movember's doing about that, and of course all the male health stuff that again we don't discuss out of embarrassment.
It does come from a place of men's health. If a human man gave a damn about themselves and implemented an element of self-care and looked at what they wanted, who they are, and moved through their lives in touch with what they need to make them feel better about their situations and environments, I genuinely believe there would be less people arguing online. There would be people just leaving it there or not looking for fights online or whether it's in the streets, etc. And it all starts from a place of self-worth. And if we can, you know, raise awareness for that in the best possible way, it's the most important thing.
Yeah, and it's working out what self-worth is. And I guess a lot of men are still judging their male self-worth by something from 50 or 60 years ago.
Yes.
And the world has moved on, and that isn't the way to, you know, and it wasn't always right, it wasn't always wrong either. But the world's moved on, and being a man means a different thing now. And it always will. So this, you know, I talk about it in the book, this idea of going back to cavemen and saying we're essentially cavemen, so that's why we behave like we do. It's bullshit. No one knows what cavemen and women did and who did what jobs. But, you know, we're not cavemen anymore. You know, we're not animals anymore. We've changed. We have different sensibilities. And the world's changing quicker than it ever did, and that's confusing. But we need to adapt to that. But also, you know, I can't see it being anything other than positive if men realize that, you know, they don't have to bottle things up. They don't have to be strong and silent. They can be strong. They can be great. You know, we want people to be great dads. We want people to be present dads. We want people to care about each other. We want people to protect. We want men to protect people who are weaker than them if they can, if that's their skill set. That's not my skill set, but I would give it a go if I'm ever called upon. but it's to find your personal worth, and that is not defined by your sex or your gender. That is defined by the things that you're good at, the things that you're interested in. And you can be whoever you want to be. You know, you don't have to conform to society's idea of what a man or a woman is.
And I think, as we mentioned earlier, conditioning. We don't have to conform to our environmental conditions from when we are children, looking up to WWF superstars and movie stars, badasses. We're not always going to be these people. And if you're more in touch with who you are as a human being, and don't try so hard to live within that bracket of what you think is success or reality.
Yeah.
I mean, we could just give ourselves a bit of a break.
Yeah, and be happier, be more attractive to whoever you want to be attractive to. You know, it's not people aren't. You know, you can say, "Oh, people love bad boys, and people want to be treated mean." It's not true. You know, people want to be with someone who's sensitive and empathetic and in touch with themselves and sorted out, right? So, like, and that's what, you know, I wasn't ready to be in a serious relationship until I met my wife. Because I wasn't personally sorted out. You know, I wasn't in the right frame of mind. I wasn't the right person.
I don't think anybody ever is, really.
No, well, they're not completely, but I was more in that place. And you realize what's important and what your motivation should be and where you should be. And, you know, and you're happy with yourself. And I think until you're happy with yourself, you're not going to be happy with anyone else.
Oh, totally. And it takes time. Like you say, you've got to learn by your mistakes. And it takes your entire 20s is basically that. Man, 30s from my perspective.
Well, definitely for me, 20s and 30s. You know, and I was a slow start. I was very immature, and it took me a long time to kind of get anywhere near being, and I'm still an immature, to be fair. But I was I wasn't ready to be in the adult world. It took me a long, long time. But you can still stay true to whoever you are. Being mature and immature is still, you know, you find your own balance of that. But it's absolutely its experience. And we have to stop being so harsh on each other for the mistakes we make, you know. I
see it on a daily basis on Instagram. I shouldn't be on there, but all I see is do this by the time you're 30, have two houses by 35, have this type of life and wife and all that type of stuff. And it's just incredibly draining because...
It is. And in my career, right, when I was 20, being the most famous comedian in the world was like all I wanted, you know, or at least big TV shows, everyone knew I was, all that sort of stuff. And... you know, life doesn't work out that way, and things were going quite well, but then things didn't go as well, and I had to learn to understand, you know, to cope with that. But actually, it's led me to places that are much more interesting. It would be the last thing I would want now is to be like super famous. I love where I've got by accident. It wasn't where I was aiming, and I've ended up somewhere that I'm much happier with. But you are, again, you're just conditioned to think, oh, I should behave in this way, or I need to be successful, I need to do this. But actually, your failures will define you, your failures will help you. I mean, they won't define you, but they will help you, move on and define who you are, and you'll become stronger through your failures. We all make mistakes, we all fuck up, we all have disappointments, and it's learning. I guess that's what makes you an adult or a man, is learning to cope with life when it throws a curveball at you and things go wrong.
You know, acquiring tools to help you through situations is one of the biggest things I've done in the last 10 years. It's, you know, I went through a difficult time 10 years with depression and there was a suicide attempt and I had no tools to deal with life at that time. And looking back at it now, when that depression kind of creeps up, I mean, I've got a shitload of stuff I can do that I've been lucky enough to obtain over the last 10 years. And I feel bad that people just don't have that experience and life experience to kind of just go into that treasure trove of mental health tools and go, do you know what, I'm having a shit day, but I'm going to call this person, I'm going to go for a walk, I'm going to do whatever I need to do to get me out of this situation. Yeah, and that's what life gives you.
Yeah, our tools. And that's, and what's great is for you to talk about that, because the minute you hear someone talking about that and be honest about that, then you go, oh, you know, I follow that. But look, you know, if you hang around and if you push through this, the other, you'll get through the other side and you'll go, why the hell did I want to do that? Why would I have missed out on all of this? You know, so it's, you know, and I know it's more complicated than that, but it's important for us all to talk and talk honestly and openly. And I think that's, you know, that's why this sort of stuff is great. And, you know, and it just needs to get to more people. And, We do that a person at a time. You do it a person at a time, you know. So you can do.
And books like yours create conversations, which is very, very, very important. And it's a really good read. So. It's really got me through the presidential election process. And whiskey. But, you know, mainly this. And I've got to ask you very quickly before you go. You've been brilliant with time. Thank you very, very much. Is this going to translate into a comedic performance on tour?
Well, weirdly, I hadn't thought about it. And my wife suddenly, when she read it, she said, you should do this as a show. And I haven't really been doing stand-up for a couple of years. I was just listening to the audiobook of myself on my walk today just to see how it turned out, just to see if I was all right. And I'm very self-critical. And I usually hate doing that. But I was actually, you know, I thought it worked really well as an audiobook. And it's only two, you know, I think the actual book is probably in about 2 hours long when you read it out. So a show needs to be, you know, an hour and a half. So I could, you know, I sort of started thinking, yeah, it might be something I could do.
Oh, you should.
As a stage show once we're back, you know, whenever that will be, the problems might be solved.
2036. Let's do it.
So it might be my next show as well. Yeah, I think I might do it.
No, it'd be great. I'd love to come and see it in the future whenever that happens. Thank you so much for your time today.
No, that's my absolute pleasure. Thank you. Good luck
You've
with everything.
Great. Yeah, cheers, mate. Take care.
Right.
Change the face of men's health. For more information or to support Movember, head to movember.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.